They're coming with two things I deem very expensive and important. Their time. Time is one of the most precious commodity offer to us as human beings, or anyone, or any animals here on this planet. And so we want to thank Larry for coming and spend some of this precious stuff with us, because it is a precious commodity. You must learn to honor her, respect time, and give her her due. And she will reward you once you allow her to teach you and guide you in your life as you apply other principles. The other is the journey. The journey has much wisdom, knowledge, insight. It created the individual that is before us today. And we want to thank Larry for coming and sharing with us his wisdom, his knowledge, all of that he has gained as a result of being here on this planet. And we want to thank him that he is here, and we want to welcome him. Larry, thank you so much for coming to Threads of Enlightenment.
Thanks, Ken. Appreciate it. I like being here.
It is an honor. How do you serve mankind? That's the question I keep asking people. And as I mentioned to you, I think it's a really interesting question. So how do you serve mankind?
So when I married my wife in 1974, I didn't serve mankind at all. And the reason I didn't serve mankind at all is because I really just thought about myself. And because I thought about myself so much, I wasn't much of a servant. Then 40 years later, after my wife was about to leave the planet, she had done her job. And she had done a really good job, because what happened in that 40 years is she gave me a lot of pain. And a lot of pain. And so what was she doing? She was saying, you can't do this, you can't do that, you have to do things my way, not your way. And also that meant that you can't do the ways of your family, your mother, your father. And so that's what I was. I was created to be a version of my mother and father, and that's what I was. So she was hating it because she was creating a version of her mother and father. So she grew up in a violent home where the way you expressed your emotions was to be violent. And the way I grew up is that you grew up to just be quiet and just do your own thing. Be interested in your own things. And so my parents were interested in gambling and drinking, and because that's what they were interested in, that's what I received. But then they did an amazing thing when I was in the between 1 and 10 years old. My mother started to tell me that we'd have more if my father didn't gamble. And while she was doing that, my father would take me aside and say, we'd have more if your mother didn't drink. And so by doing those two things, they each canceled out. And so now I can't drink and I can't gamble. So what happened in the 40 years of marriage is that she took her non-expressive ways, her violent ways, and she started to give them to me. And when she gave them to me, my value system was my parents' value system. And so, you know, aside from the cancellation of drinking and gambling, which I didn't do because I got that cancellation, I then started to be fighting against her. And so I would fight against her, she would fight against me, and we were what I call reactors. We were reactors together. So she reacted to me and I reacted to her. And it wasn't until like 27 years later that I started to realize I need to become a creator and not a reactor. Because if I was a creator, she would react to me, because she's a reactor and she's going to stay a reactor. And so I started to realize that if I create with my mind, she's going to react in her normal style. So if I'm creating peace and calm and gentleness and self-control and discipline, if I start creating those things, she's going to start reacting to those things. And that's why my story was, I lived 27 years in a marriage made in hell, but in the 28th year, I fell in love with my wife. Well, that's the story I told. And how did that happen? I was really
how did that happen?
I was falling in love.
Hang on one second. Let me ask you something, Larry, because you said something that was very important, and I wanted to. You said that you you started to change,
Yes.
seeking a different way. How did that came about? It just don't come about like that. What began to happen to you personally that made you say, I need to find another way?
So what was happening, I was looking to all kinds of ideas, spiritual ideas, Christian ideas, psychology ideas, meditation ideas, all kinds of things that have to do moving me towards spirit and away from the body. Because the more body-based I was, the more reactionary I was. But the more energy-based I was, the less reactive I became, and the more interested I became in actually going inside and start to tap into what's down there. And I didn't understand what was down there. What was in here, right? And so I went from a focus on out there to focusing on in here. And that's really what made the change for me. And so, when everybody's on the journey that you're talking about, when they're trying to go somewhere, where are they trying to go? They're trying to go from out there to in here, because that's what we're all doing. We're
Absolutely.
all trying to leave the out there focus that this is a world with real things and we have to react to it. That's how we start very shallow, or so it seems to be. And then we start moving more inward to what's in here. And so what's in here is patience and forgiveness and kindness. And so one of the things that tells us that is near-death experiences. So what happens to near-death experiences? So the people who die and they temporarily go to this spiritual place, they have an experience and they're transformed. And when they come back, angry people are no longer angry. Drinkers stop drinking, right? They become interested in quantum physics. All kinds of things happen to them because what are they doing? They're now leaving the world out there as a thing, and they're coming into the world in here, and that's how they make the change. So I was doing the same kind of thing without a near-death experience. I didn't have a near-death experience. I've just read about near-death experiences, and so I'm seeing that I think it accomplished it without a near-death experience. That 27 years of hell. And after the 27 years, I started becoming more focused on the inside and far less on the outside. And so as I look at the learning path that everyone's on, the first thing I see is leaving the focus on out there and coming into the world in here. And that idea of out there in here is really important if you're going to make the trip. If you're going to make the trip from being focused on yourself and think on the world of things, the most important thing is to get from out there into in here. And so, one of the things I tell is that you are the story you tell. And so this is difficult for people to hear. You are the story you tell because they don't even realize they're telling a story. But everything they do is a story. Everything they feel is a story. Everything they imagine is a story. So they think, imagine, and feel the story of their life. And so when you look, I ask them, let's take a look. There's two stories. If stories are creating everything, then what are the two stories? The stories you want and the stories you doubt. And so I ask them, so let's take 2 weeks and let's ask the question, what percent are you in the stories of you doubt and what percent are you in the stories that you want? And so they don't really kind of know how to nail that down, but they start to think, it feels like 50-50. It's 50 stories I want, 50 stories I doubt. Or they go to 80-20 stories I want. And so what they're doing is they're now naming the kinds of stories they're telling. And so if once they land on a number or two numbers, I say, well, okay, so if you're 30% stories you want and you're 70% stories you doubt, what kind of life do you have? So I ask them that, and they go, oh, and they have some troubling answer. Oh, gee, I don't know. And it's not good. And so they make some kind of statement about what kind of life they live. And so I'm making the case that everything that exists in the world of things was first a story someone told. And that's not something people know. And I said, Elon Musk did not invent the Tesla just by inventing it. he told the story about the Tesla. And how many times did he tell the story about the Tesla? Over and over and over and over and over again. And he never stopped telling the story of the Tesla. But now, when you think about stories you want and stories you doubt, what kind of doubt stories did he tell about the Tesla? The answer is zero. He told zero stories about the Tesla that were doubt stories. So that means for him to invent the Tesla, he had to start tell stories that he wanted, 100%. And so that's your goal. Your goal is to leave your split life of telling stories of doubt and want and come to only like Tesla, like Elon Musk did. He came to 100% stories he wants, and he threw out all stories of doubt. Because imagine he's at an investor meeting and he's 20% doubt and 80% want. That 20% that the investor hear, they just feel it. They feel the doubt. And if they feel the doubt, they're not going to invest.
Absolutely.
Oh,
absolutely.
Okay. Even 20% is a problem. Yes, 20% is a problem. We do not want stories of doubt. And so what I do for them is I help them create their first three stories. And so I'm just looking at the kind of stories that they're thinking about, and the stories they are telling. I start with an opening phrase, and the opening phrase is, "Isn't it great that?" So I do this all the time. "Isn't it great that?" And I said dot dot dot. So give me a story, and boy, do they struggle. They struggle to tell the story. And the reason why is they're living a life of doubt and want, doubt and want, doubt and want, because they're living so long. When I come suddenly on the scene and I ask them to start to tell me a story of want, they don't, they almost can't do it. And, and so I have to kind of give them something. I'm just looking at one of the stories. "Isn't it great that Sam, Sam and I are now free of our childhoods, and now we can accept each other as we really are." So that's a story. "Isn't it great that Sam and I are now free of our childhoods, and we can accept each other as we really are?" And so that's one of three stories I helped them create. And once they have stories, now they have a possibility for a plan. Because once you start telling stories and you've got three stories to switch between, now you start to go into life. And now what are you going to do? Well, you start telling the stories, you read them, and you're trying to memorize them. And then what happens is that doubt comes. Doubt comes. Sure enough. Like, didn't I just talk to that guy about telling 100% story? No. The doubt's going to come. And the reason the doubt's going to come is because ego, which has been written about for thousands of years, is here to run the world. And it's here to make be what it is, which is a separated entity. And so it wants to be separate from God. It wants to be separate from man. And so it separates you all the time. And so what's it trying to do? Always trying to separate. Well, what you're now in is you're now in the decision to, what do I want to be? Do I want to be in the life I want, or do I want to be in the life that I don't want? What is it going to be? Want or don't want? Want or don't want? What am I going to do? So what the ego does is it convinces you with little stories from your childhood, that childhood is comfortable. Whatever happened back there is what's natural, what feels good, what your home, and that's what it tries to tell you, that your childhood is your home. So I created a thing called the chaos to purpose scale, and I call people lower on that scale chaos kids. And so chaos kids are people who were raised with some abandonment or abuse or neglect. So abandonment, abuse, and neglect is what we all have. We all have some version of abandonment or abuse or neglect, and it's emotional or physical. It doesn't matter which it is, but it's all painful. And now we have to find out, how are we going to leave the doubt created by abandonment, abuse, and neglect? And that's really what everybody's job is. And everybody's trying to do, and what you're trying to do is you're trying to get everybody to take that path to move towards what you want. And you do that by the stories you tell. But if you're not even aware that you're telling stories, because you can think a story, you can imagine a story, and you can feel a story, those are all stories. And because those are all stories, now what kind of stories are you going to tell? And so, like, in the mind of people, they say, well, I want to tell the story, but then I have this feeling, so here comes the ego, to
Yep.
come into them and start to say, no, you can't talk like that. That's ridiculous. You can't talk like that. You got to tell the facts. Look what
Yeah.
happened. And so what does the ego do? It says, go into the world and say what's really happening. Because if you don't say what's
Yeah.
really happening, you're going to be crazy. And that's what
Yeah.
everybody is trying to do. They're trying to stay sane by telling about what's happening. And when you're a storyteller, you're telling the story you want. And so the
Yeah.
world now looks at you telling the story you want and say, well, you can't tell the story you want. The story that's happening is what you need to tell. That's what the
Yeah.
news is. The news is a story of what's happening. And that's what the ego is doing. Well, look what's happening in the world. Look that your job is to tell it. Well, that's called being a reporter, because that's what reporters do. Reporters go out in the
Yeah.
world, look for everything wrong, and they come back and they tell everybody about it. And then everybody keeps on listening to it. So one of the things I see is that when people listen to me or get in one of my courses, they throw away the news. Now, why do
Yeah.
they throw away the news? Like, don't you want to be informed? No. Actually, we found out that we don't have to be informed because our friends, our relatives, and people we know will tell us the news. And they'll give us a really
Yeah.
condensed version, and they won't go on and on. So they throw the news away, and they find out that their life is a whole lot easier when they don't have the stories of the media telling them about what they don't want. And so that's the power of storytelling. Because what is the media? It's a storytelling machine. And it's everywhere and in everything. And then when you add social media, what is social media? Social media is the world going to the media, collecting the stories, interpreting them the way they want, and regurgitating social media. So social media and the media is still tell me what I don't want. And so when people drop all of that, they start to feel calmer, safer, or what I say is calm, secure, safe, important, and valuable. And when they do that, they start feeling a whole lot better. And that's really what I do to serve mankind. I just push that idea over and over and over again until they
That's
finally start.
beautiful. That's absolutely beautiful. Because that is, I hope you guys are listening to Larry. I think we just ended the show because he just said everything in that few minutes that he was talking, and it's very important about the story that you tell. And a gentleman and I, we were having this conversation a few days ago about that, and the story to be told to us. When mom gets pregnant, whatever arguments they're having, music they're listening to, all that stuff is information. That's the story begin to be relayed to you. And when you are living your life and you're once you're born and you're out and you're in this family, then the family has their story. Then you have the church has their story, whatever religion you're in and belief in that. So all of these, and we use the fancy word of programming, but when you take away the word programming, it's stories that you are being fed day in, out. Corporate America understands this. And so they're telling you the story on TV that McDonald's is pretty healthy. And it looks beautiful. The picture looks good. And all these other things they're telling you how, but all of that they're talking about, Larry, is only for the outside. Very few people are talking about the inside, who you truly are, what's going on. And that individual is starving and in pain and has no idea how to come out. And so here you have Larry is able to help you to excavate all of that, so he can bring that data inside to show you that, hey, you don't have to listen to all of those stories. And as he said, as you started to excavate and clean things out, you start putting aside your shift, the importance of who you are began to shift. The news, the external stuff, it's not important. The TV becomes not important as it was before. All of those external things you'll be able to walk away from because you know that that's not who you are. It's just a part of you. And so the world is just telling the external, get the money, get this, get this. And then you have people that are multimillionaires that will have more money than most of us, and they commit suicide. Something is not wrong, is not right with that picture, because yet they accomplish everything that they told them, but yet something happened. And it's usually that internal thing that was not dealt with. So here you are, Larry. I have a question as to, you said you started bringing things to you. You started looking at Christianity, meditation, and all these other aspects of tools that will begin to guide you into the spiritual realm. What did you bring into your life that assisted you in getting connected to the internal you? What were some of those tools? Was it meditation? What were those tools that you brought into your life that assisted you?
Meditation is a way to calm down and stop the stimulation of the world. That's why it's so key. But once you have got a meditative way about you, what is happening? You're going into the mind. You're trying to still thoughts. And so what you're now doing is you're trying to say, well, if I give you words like appreciation, gratitude, thankfulness, love, forgiveness, if I rattle off those words and I ask, well, what is the word that really matters? Because this is really what you're asking. You're asking, well, what did you do? And out of all those words, those all words aren't equal. The one word that's really powerful is forgiveness. Now, why is that word that's so powerful? Because when you're focused on the world of things outside and you're not inside, because what the ego wants is the ego wants us to have no mind. It wants us to have a body. And so it's always pushing everything towards the body. What is television? Television is a focus on the body. What is the media? What is stimulation, sports? All those things are body driven because the ego wants you to have no mind. And so if you have no mind, then you cannot forgive, because forgiveness is done in the mind. It's not done anywhere else. It's not done in church. It's not done anywhere. It's done in the mind. And so what I started to realize is, of all those words I was rattling off, forgiveness was the thing that I had to pursue. And so that's what I started to do. I started to pursue forgiveness. Now, the really good thing about married to a woman who's programmed for anger and built for an angry value system is that she makes a lot of moments that need to be forgiven.
Yeah.
So I need to forgive the angry woman over and over and over and over again. And that's really what really made such a difference for me. Forgiveness.
Yeah.
Really, that's it. And, and so if we to focus on something, what does the ego not do? The ego does not forgive, not ever. And because the ego will not forgive, will that be the place to start? So I find storytelling with forgiveness, I've really got a winning combination, don't I? so that was really, the forgiveness led to a lot of freedom.
How did your wife receive that, Larry? Because here you have these, you have anger, as you said, and you are gaining insight and knowledge about not responding in anger anymore. And you are now pursuing aggressively forgiveness, and those clashes happening. As you began to practice to make what you're learning practically in your life, how long did it take, Larry, before she began to, it'll change her too. It'll change her.
She's going to react. She's not going to react with a conversation. She's not going to react by talking about it. It's not going to be anything in the world of like talking with your mouth. So what I came up with, I had a phrase, which is, we are good, pure and innocent, all is forgiven and released. Now, when you first hear, we are good, pure and innocent, all is forgiven and released, it's almost like you can't remember it. You can't, what did he say? So it's three statements. And the reason you can't remember the three statements is the ego is screaming like crazy to make sure you don't remember this, because it doesn't want you to take the path of forgiveness, because that's a horrible path, because it means the death of the ego. So it's not going to let you do that. So you got to write it down. We are good, pure and innocent, all is forgiven and released. So what I started to do is I started to forgive with that phrase. Mm-hmm. We are good, pure and innocent, all is forgiven and released. So what kinds of things are happening? All kinds of things, all kinds of combinations of inconvenience and urgency and desperation and craziness and judgment and condemnation and all kinds of things. You know, forget who cares what the stories are. It was like really bad, right? So as the events are happening, I'm being pushed. I'm being demanded to work in difficult situations, and who cares what it is? It's lots and lots of things that make us unhappy, right?
Yeah.
So I'm doing, we are good, pure and innocent, all is forgiven and released. So what happens when I'm in a situation where I'm being pressed and crushed and demanded and put down and not all those things, and I use the phrase, something happens. And what happens, I didn't make happen, because I'm saying the words in thought to myself.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only place I put it. I didn't write it out or anything, right? I just said, we are good, pure and innocent. Well, when you're in the thick of a place where you like are about to get angry, start to get react and strike back and revenge and all those things, and you do, we are good, pure and innocent, all is forgiven and released, well, suddenly you can't do it. You can't react. You can't get angry. You can't attack. You can't fight. You just, it's all gone. It starts to release you. And like, it's like a fizzy Alka-Seltzer, just kind of away. And now you're feeling like, huh, the situation hasn't changed.
Yeah.
Still mean, still as angry, still as frustrated, still, right? Still as demanding. It just hasn't changed, but I changed. And that's really what this did. It changed me. And so that's really what the answer is, where we're all trying to get to. We're all trying to get to a place where I change. Well, how do I change? So when I'm forgiving, she's changing because the energy in her is reacting to me. Why? Because she's a reaction. She's a reaction. Yeah. She has to react. So when you start to do what you're supposed to do and live in forgiveness as a way of life, the world of reactors going to change, because they're reactors. Yeah. That's what reactors do. They don't plan their own agenda. They don't say, you know, I'm mean today. I'm going to be mad today. They don't do that. All they do is they go into their life in the day. They wake up and they get dressed and they say, okay, what am I supposed to react to? And so they live a life of reaction. They don't know anything else.
Yeah.
And this is everybody. This is everybody, every culture, every language, everywhere. They're all living this way. And so they're all reacting. So if you're married to a person who's difficult and hard and demanding, and you just start the path of forgiveness. Because when you start the path of forgiveness, that person's going to react. And they're going to react, and they're not going to be able to choose how they react. They got to react to forgiveness and the energy that's created when you do that forgiveness. Because what are you saying? We are good, pure and innocent. All is forgiven and released. Well, that's the truth about everything.
Mm-hmm.
That we are spirits. We are not bodies, we're spirits. And since we're spirits, then we are good, pure and innocent. All is forgiven and released. Okay, so that sets me free. And so something happens to cause me to become more in this state with those words, with that thought, with that imagination. And now what's a reactor supposed to do? Because whatever gonna poke them or prod them or, you know, drive them crazy is not gonna be there anymore. It's going to be released for them, the reactor. But that's the good news is you're married to a reactor. Why is that good? Because that person has to react to a creator. And all you've got to do is become a creator, and then your reactor will be fine eventually. It'll take time, but your reactor will keep on reacting to your forgiveness that you keep on doing again and again and again. And so, Ken, when there's a thing like if you take anger, if your spouse is angry and you forgive, That anger that drives that, which is the ego drives anger. The ego can't drive anger when there's forgiveness. There's nothing to push against. When there's nothing to push against, the reactor doesn't know what to do. And so they kind of lose all the fuse and they start to go, oh, okay. I don't know why I was mad. You're in an argument. Like, why was I so upset? Why don't you know why you were so upset? Because you're not angry for the reason you think. That's just beyond you. You don't even know the reason you're angry. You've got a story you told, but that story isn't really the story. You're not angry for the reason you think. And that's why reactors are so easy to lead. They're so easy to lead. When you start living a life of forgiveness, when you start becoming a storyteller and start to tell only the story you want, well, what's a reactor going to do but follow your story? You know, what do people do when I talk to them? They say, well, my husband's doing this, and my husband's doing this, and my husband said this, and my husband believes that, and then my husband did that, right? And why are you telling the story of what he's doing? Why are you telling that story? Don't tell that story. That's not the story you're telling. Stop telling what he's doing to create a mess. Why are you telling about a story to create a mess? You're just going to destroy yourself doing that. So, well, don't I talk to my husband? Don't I want to be close to him? Don't I want to know what he thinks? No, you don't. You don't want to know what he thinks. You don't want to know what he says. You don't want to repeat what he believes. None of that's necessary. Why? Because the ego's behind all of it. You know, people want to blame God for all kinds of bad things. But God's nothing to do with it. It's an ego world, a world driven by the ego, the world of separation. So since that's the ego's deal, why are you participating? Right? So why are you participating talking to about a husband you're married to who's repeating the words of the ego? Why are you doing that? You're just going to be literally infecting yourself with those ideas. So now you don't need to.
That's so true. I know, as you were telling that story, I remember, my listeners, I always tell them, they know that my background is Christianity, and that when Adam fell and God came to him and said, "Hey, what happened?" He says, "That woman that you gave me." So he was telling a story. And so that story that everyone is telling, Larry, it's an old story. It's been around for generations and generations. And so we have to learn to step outside. And forgiveness is one of the most powerful things you will ever do in your life. Because within that forgiveness, as you forgive, you also have to forgive some of yourself, your behavior, your response to certain things. You will recognize and you'll see, wow, why did I allow this to happen to me? And you have to learn to be kind to yourself. And I've told this story a couple of times, Larry. I met this woman and she had arthritis and her hands were really, really bad. And I said to her, actually, because I thought her husband was alive, I said, "Where is he so that we could, pray and bring this thing together?" And she said to me, "No, he's dead." And I said, "He's dead?" And she said, "Yeah, he's been dead for X amount of years." And it was quite a big, I think it was like 10, 10 years or something like that, Larry. And I looked at her and I said, "But why wouldn't you forgive him? Because he's dead. I mean, let it go." And she said to me, and I'll never forget it. She said, "I will never forgive him for what he did to me." And she said that she told me that he slept with her best friend. So here's a husband that has been dead for X amount, over 10 years. And still, this individual refuses to forgive him so that her arthritis, her healing would take place. And she said no. And I remember looking at her and then I said, "Then there's no need for me to pray. You have a good day." Yeah, because the prayer was to release her from her unforgiveness. And as a, the benefit of her releasing that would be the healing that energy would be dissipated from her body. and she refused. And I'm sure she stayed in that state because she told me she will never do it. So Larry's talking about one of the most powerful things you will ever do in your life is learn how to live and be in a state of forgiveness. And it helps you, as he states, the ego is not present and you live that type of life. So
Okay.
as you began to live that type, go ahead, Larry, go ahead.
That story is really
Yeah.
perfect because what did she do? She told a story of unfaithfulness.
Yeah.
She was really angry at the unfaithfulness of that story. And
Yep.
so she told that story for 10 years. And then while she was telling that story for 10 years, she could not forgive for 10 years because forgiveness is a completely different story. We are good, pure
Yeah.
and innocent, all is forgiven and released. That's a different story. And so she
Yeah.
couldn't tell it. She couldn't tell it. And you couldn't reach her because
Yeah.
she wouldn't stop telling the story.
Yeah.
Can you not? But the reason I love the story so much is because the story seems like a different thing you can do. It seems
Yeah.
like an easy thing to do. Like, so could you tell a different story? Could you tell
Yeah.
a different story? Like, the idea of telling a different story seems like the beginning of maybe I could. Maybe I could
Yeah.
tell a different story. Okay, so you don't have to forgive. Why don't you just tell a different story?
Yeah.
And that positions in people a different way to think about it. I
Yeah.
don't have to forgive. I just have to tell a different story. Yeah, okay, so why did my husband cheat on me?
Yeah.
Why did he cheat on me? Because if in telling the why story, I have to tell a different story. Well, it could be because he was abandoned as a child, he was abused as a child, and neglected as a child. Well, now what does he know other than please himself? What does he
Yeah.
know? Well, he lived a life of trying to please himself because he was abandoned, abused, and neglected, and never had the love that made him actually feel complete. And so he died in a lifetime. He died not knowing how to love. He couldn't do it. And so he didn't know. And so what did he do? Some woman said something really nice to him. And so he gave in because he was abandoned, abused, and neglected. He was looking for love. He was
Yeah.
looking to be loved. That's a different story. He
Yeah.
was looking to be loved. Should I hate him for looking to be loved? Well, maybe not, right? So that's the beginning
Yeah.
of the change. The beginning of the change of the story. Maybe
Yeah.
not. How about
Yeah.
absolutely not? I can't fault the man for reaching out for love. He didn't know where love was.
Yeah.
Nobody told him where love was. No one showed him where love was. How could he know? Right? And so you start to tell a different story. It's easier to get to forgiveness when the story guides you there.
Yeah, you guys that are listening to us, man, this is really powerful stuff. What Larry's talking about, and we have tons of guests that use different terminology, but his presentation of the same principles within using about a story is very profound. And it is easy for one to assimilate, if you will, into their understanding so that they can get it and begin to understand that it's now a new story that you're going to tell. And so we have one of the things that I tell people is meditation helps you to control the thoughts. So that you can start designing and having that new story being told. My thoughts would be running 1 million miles a minute. And it was meditation that I introduced into my life when my life was in this dark whirlwind of madness. I brought in meditation and it began the outward madness. Was because the inside was a mess. And then when I started bringing in meditation, the thoughts, I remember learning to say, Larry, I would say to the thoughts that were coming, I'm rising in corporate America and all the different things, and the thoughts would be flooding. And I would remember I had to learn to say, not now. I remember that phrase, I would say, Not now.
Yeah.
Right now, I'm
Okay.
being,
Cancel that.
huh?
Cancel that is my phrase. Your phrase is
Yeah.
my phrase was cancel that. Good
I
thought.
would say not now. And then I would continue, and it changed my life. It became less and less not now, and more focused, and able to control my thoughts and redesign and retell my story. As I redesign my thoughts, I redesign my story, and my story changed, and I got different outcome than where I was before. And so that's what personal development is all about, your story. And so we have Larry here. And guys, I'm gonna give you all of his stuff. I'm gonna provide it for you because you got to get into his space, because he has such wisdom and understanding as you guys are hearing us having this conversation. So here you are, Larry. You pursued the forgiveness piece, and it begins to bear fruit, if you will. As you're moving through your life, and you are, what other pursuits did you begin to incorporate in your life once you've seen the fruit and the results of forgiveness? What else did you look out to say, oh, let me grab this in, bring it in closer, and began to focus on that as you began to expand you and learn more about you?
So when we read a book, we take in ideas, but that doesn't mean the ideas are coming in. What really causes the ideas to come in is to start to write about them. When you start to write about ideas you're thinking about, it's almost like they become more clay-like, and you start to shape them into forms because you're writing about them. And so I just did pages and pages of journal notes on yellow legal pads, and I wrote and wrote and wrote because I was trying to get the ideas into myself. So if I would read a book, I would start to write in a different, I start in my own expression. I would write the ideas of the author in the way I thought about them. And so that was me writing. And so I wasn't just reading, I was now writing what I was reading. And when you're reading and you're writing and reading and writing and you're putting them together, they're really coming in and they're sticking and they're staying. And so that's really a big practice that I had to do. And I've done that for a lot of years. During the 40 years of my journey, I had to find that reading and writing kept me going. You know, because when you read an author and you find something that feels encouraging to you, if you write about it, it's going to be more encouraging to you. As opposed to just reading it and going, oh, yeah, I think that's true, right? That's thinking about it is not enough. You got to write it because when you write it, you have to, like, okay, so what did I just read? I got to write down what I just read in my own terms, in my own way. And so if I have very limited language and I have very simple language, if that's what I have, that's what I'm going to use, and that's how I'm writing, this guy says that I do forgive.
Yeah.
Right?
I did
However
the same.
you want
I did the
to.
same. I have books and just several pads. And usually if you come to my house, I have my living room table, and under my living room table there's pads and pens that are close by. The bedroom has a pad and a pen close by, because sometimes you're reading a book or even listening to something, and a thought will come, and I don't want to lose that. An insight would come, and then I would have to sit down. And the Bible says, write the vision down so that the others that are coming, it will resonate within them. But it also resonates in you as you're writing it, as you said. And so I would write that thought down, and then later on I would go and meditate on it and so forth. That's how the title of my book, Blueprint of Faith, that I wrote came by. One day that thought came, Blueprint of Faith, and I wrote it down. And I was like, oh, that sounds really nice. And I remember saying that. I was like, wow, that sounds nice. And at the time I was teaching, and so I thought that I was a teacher at the church, and I said, yeah, one day I'll write a sermon about it, not knowing that it would be a book, and that the whole book was about the Blueprint of Faith. It was a series of life lessons that I went through, and as a result of that phrase, I went through those life lessons in order to write that book. And it's really fascinating how that happened, guys. And so many of you may, as Larry said, he has a pad, and I just made that statement as well. Keep those around. I remember my mother was the one that got me into that, because she would keep it at her bedhead, and she would write things that she have dreams and other things like that. And she had books of all kinds of wonderful insights and knowledge. So be mindful of that, because it's your inside. It's you in the inside wants to express itself. And you need to write it down so that you wouldn't lose it. You're reading a book, you're gathering information, something comes, as Larry said, and you are now going to interpret those words with your personality, your understanding, your stuff. And what you're doing is creating something more beautiful based on you. And as you do that, you are going to be able to serve others from that very same space that you're doing, because that's where the good stuff is. So here you are, you're moving through life, Larry. You are now practicing all of these things. Talk to us about your relationship with your mate, your wife, that as you are beginning to change, how was that change in you translating to her and then your relationship together?
So, because she was a reactor, she stopped being so reactionary. And
Wow.
that's a thing like, wait a minute, are you saying you changed her behavior? And so when we hear the word you changed her behavior, that's what the world says. The world says you changed her behavior. And the way they think about this, because they're so obsessed with the mouth and the body, say things with your mouth, you do things with your body, and that's how you change the world. Well, that's what they believe. They believe that. And so when I tell a story about my wife had to change her reaction because I started to change my energy, it's like, did you change her by changing your energy? Like, I didn't intend to change her energy. I wasn't thinking about her at all. I was thinking about myself. I was thinking about how I was vibrating in energy myself. And so that was the most important thing, what happened inside me, not what happened to her. So all I'm doing as a teaching tool is I'm saying, if you're with a person in a marriage and that person is less aware than you, or has more abandonment, more abuse, and more neglect in their childhood than you do, that's called the weakest link. And so you are now married to the weakest link. And so you got a chain of two, and now you're married to the weakest link. What are you going to do? Well, acknowledge that that weakest link is a reactor, and they are going to react to you. Now, what are you going to do? And like, oh, why do I got to make it all about me doing something? Why do I got to do something? Why can't she do something? And so I had a lot of that in the early years. Why can't she do something? Why can't she fix something? Well, because this isn't about her. This is about me. It's about what I'm supposed to learn, what I'm supposed to realize, what I'm supposed to see. That's what this is about. Oh, it is? Oh, so now I'm grudging. And so that brings me to the idea of the three stamps. The three stamps of the black stamp, the red stamp, and the green stamp. And so the black stamp is this is good, I accept it. But the green stamp is I'll do it, but I won't like it. And the red stamp is I don't like it and I won't do it. And so these three stamps are literally your internal approval. And so if we turn these phrases into rubber stamps, and we had a green ink pad that said, I'll do it, but I won't like it, That's like the Christian stamp, you know? I'll do it, but I won't like it. So I'll do it, I'll do physically do it, but I won't like inside in my heart, I won't like it. And so that's the green. The red stamp is I don't like it and I won't do it. That's flat out rejection. And so when we come to the green stamp and the red stamp, those stamps don't take you anywhere where you want to go. The only the black stamp takes you there. And so the black stamp is this is good, I accept it. And so what are you doing with the black stamp? You're now stamping the black stamp on difficult, hard, miserable, frustrating, angry things, and something the world doesn't want to do, because the world's run by the ego. And so they don't want that. They don't want to do the black stamp. But the black stamp is really what sets you free enough as a creator to now let the reactor now see that you are black stamping everything. And you're not red stamping, you're not green stamping, you're black stamping. And so because you now have the black stamp, this is good, I accept it. That's the black stamp. And the green stamp is unacceptable because it's, I'll do it, but I won't like it. Well, that's the wrong attitude all the time. And then outright rejection is, I don't like it and I won't do it, which is the red stamp. And so those two stamps don't do any good for anybody. So only the black stamp does something to you as a creator. And so this is good, I accept it. So what, you know, I was talking about forgiveness, and I have a phrase for forgiveness is, we are good, pure and innocent, all is forgiven and released. Well, what does that sound like? It sounds like the black stamp. This is good, I accept it.
Yeah.
And so what are you doing? You're calling bad things good. You're calling bad things good. Like, well, there's probably a Bible verse about that. You're calling bad things
good. It's Genesis chapter one, when God comes and he sees this darkness on the earth, and he said, let there be light. And he began to take that and create, you know, change the story, if you will. And he changed the story. And as a result of him changing the story, we're looking at a couple of things hanging out in the skies and days and nights. So our story, our changing of story, has the power to create a new world, whatever that is. And we have an example of that in the book of Genesis. And so your words will change your story, as you said. You took those phrases, let there be light is a phrase, basically, and it created light. When you release those words that you believe, and it doesn't, you know, people run away from belief. They think it's an instantaneous thing. It's not. Some people, you know, will have to say it over and over and over and over again, and then it'll click in one day. And I tell people what happens. What I realized, Larry, is that Jesus said a statement that sent me on a study, and that's what we were talking about the whole entire podcast. Those who have ears, let him hear. And it took me a little while. We listen with this natural stuff, but I believe it's the inner man that hears. When he hears, it becomes real, and he will take the steps necessary. He was the one that will change the story. That guy inside begins to change the story. And when he changed the story, it always comes to pass. But you have to, some of us, when Larry talked about it, when the hard time comes, that is when it strips away all of your ability. You are naked at that place. And you have to realize that I don't have it. It has to come from somewhere else. And that is the inside, that individual there that has some answers, that a little phrase that Larry was saying that changed his life. And you heard me talk about mine when I did my meditation, not now. And everyone has their own based on who they are. And so listen to yourself. Be quiet sometimes. Don't turn off the TV. Turn off the cell phone, put it aside. Go find a corner and learn to meditate. The meditation is quieting the mind, the thought, and you will allow yourself to hear. He who has ears, let him hear. You'll allow yourself to hear, and then you'll be able to create that story. So here you are, Larry, you're seeing all of these beautiful things. I mean, in you, because it's you who's doing the changing. And as a result of you changing, the side effects is your wife began to change as well. But that's her decision. She's making those things, but you're changing you, and your focus is you. I want you to talk to, because you mentioned this story, and I give you the example of Adam when he says the woman did it. And you deal a lot with a married couple, and you're hearing the woman did it, the man did it. As you're hearing all of those ways by which they're shifting blame, what is the story that you tell them, Larry, to bring them back to them for the male and for the female?
So I talk about 10 times.
Yeah.
What are 10 times? 10 times are you're in a difficult situation and the situation keeps changing and it's difficult 10 different ways. And so what my opportunity is count 10 times that you're going to forgive. The first time, you're going to forgive. Second time, you're going to forgive. So that means the first time you're going to say that we are good, pure and innocent, all is forgiven and released. There's your first time. And so now another insult comes. And now it's time for your second time. We are good, pure and innocent, all is forgiven and released. So there's 10 times that you get to forgive. And so that's really like, remember, everybody's being run by the ego. And the ego is the idea of separation. And so since the idea is always in us as being separate, we don't want to forgive. We don't want to love. We don't want to do anything. So when you push yourself like 10 times, 10 times, okay, I'll do this 10 times. But when I get to that 10th time, I bet nothing's going to happen. I bet you nothing's going to be good. I bet nothing, right? So you're already telling a story of prediction.
Yeah.
That's an ego prediction. It's not your prediction. It's the ego's prediction, and the ego's running your life. Well, people who are living want to be independent. They want to be free. They want to be able to do whatever they want to do, whenever they want to do. You're never free here. You're living in the world of the ego. You have to not be free because the ego's here. So I say 10 times because 10 times are 10 forgivenesses. That's 10 opportunities, 10 situations, and you count them. You count, well, here's the first one. Like, how does it feel? Like, oh, it didn't feel like anything. I didn't like it. Well, that's only one time, right?
Yeah.
Another time is going to come. And now, and he's looking at other women. Okay, that's another time. Time to forgive. We are good, pure and innocent, all is forgiven and released. That's a second time. Now I have I'm waiting for my third time. Because I'm always thinking about 10 times. Like, oh, okay, that guy on the podcast said 10 times. Okay, I guess I can do anything 10 times. So they have that attitude. But why are you so grumpy? You're grumpy because the ego's running your life. The ego's controlling your life. The ego's making you do everything you're doing because the ego's telling you to do it. And you are not free. You want to have a peaceful life. You want to have a forgiveness life, a life where you like people. Where you're kind, where you're friendly, where you're enjoyable with your personality, you can't do it because the ego isn't going to let you. It's running your life. So if you start thinking about the ego's running, God's not running my life. God's not doing all these terrible things, all the horrible things that are happening in the world. Those are all ego things. Stop blaming God for anything. This is not even God's world, for crying out loud. It's the ego's world. And that's evidence everywhere, right? So if you want to see God's world, you have to look within. You have to look within where God's world is. Well, what if you're a reactor and you've been living like a reactor? Then you're not even living in God's world. But you can live in God's world. And so that's why I say 10 times. 10 times, 10 opportunities, 10 forgiveness opportunities. That's really what I say as an idea. If you want to grab onto something, 10 times is the idea.
That is perfect. Hey, guys, again, I keep redirecting you guys to Larry as far as how he is just laying the stuff out for you and I. It's very simple so that we can assimilate it into our life. But I want you guys to get in touch with him because he will take you in deeper. We are just getting a chance to, you know, dance on the surface, if you will. But when you are able to get into his classes and so forth, you're going to go deeper. You that are having family issues with your husband and wife, he can take you in deeper. Those that are having, personal stuff on their own, you can take you deeper so that you can, if some of you guys, the wife don't want to come, if you're listening to the story, it was Larry changing Larry. And then the wife started doing her thing, but he was changing himself. So sometimes I know I've been there where it's difficult to have both. But you start working on you, and they're going to become curious as to what's happening to you. And then you never know. She might be right there next to you in one of his workshops and so forth. So we're going to provide all that stuff for you guys because you need to get there. There's this husband's and wife, man. You guys deserve to have heaven on earth. Larry talked about how he was in hell for many years, 27 years. And so you don't want to be there that long. And you have a guide that is able to give you some insight, some wisdom, some knowledge that will help you get out and begin to retell the story that you have been telling yourself for so many years that you don't know if you can ever come out. There is a way out. You just have to retell the story differently. And I have someone that will help you to do that. As you're moving through life, Larry and you, how did you move from that type of situation and started navigating into becoming a servant in a sense? Because you said it was many years after that you began to develop your classes and all the different things that you were putting together to serve.
So what happens is when you're going through trouble, you learn things.
Yeah.
And when you learn things, if you've got a desire to reproduce what you learn, you're going to start explaining it to other people.
Yeah.
And that's when you start serving other people. And so the greatest feeling you can have is seeing somebody change and improve their situation in some way, even if it's a tiny little way. When somebody's getting an idea from somebody else, when person A is learning from person B, person A's life is getting better. And person B, who is the teacher, is getting a life that's better. And one of the things I noticed is that when I was teaching, I was learning. And the more I taught, the more I learned. And I, that's the way this works. So that became a thing. The more you teach, the more you learn. And so teachers learn a lot just by talking because they have to put their thoughts in order to talk. And so now like university professors or high school teachers or grade school teachers, everybody's teaching is learning. And so their life is getting better, and that's how they're serving mankind. Because when they're teaching, they're saying, I know something, I want you to know something. And so that's how they're spreading how they're serving mankind. And they're serving mankind just by doing what they love to do.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love it, guys. You know, so again, this, I know for lack of a better word, his skill set for us in Christendom, we would say ministry is insights that he got is about dealing with couples and because he went through some stuff, guys. And so there's such an onslaught on marriages today and families. And I'm just glad that he's here because it's an opportunity for us to hear at Threads of Enlightenment to provide and opportunities for families to find a place to get some wisdom, some healing, to create a different story that they are used to saying and the family is used to seeing. And so I want to invite you guys to come, and we're going to provide everything for you to get to Larry. And we just want to thank him for him coming and just sharing with us. And I know we just touched the surface. I'm going to have to bring him back so that we can get in deeper to get some of his practical insights as well. So I will bring him back so we can do that. But in the meantime, I want you guys to get into his space. Get everything that you can get your hands on. As he said, he pursued forgiveness. You have to, there's a terminology, a principle that the Bible says, and that's basically what it is. It says, seek and you shall find. And what happens is that whatever you're seeking is seeking you too.